How flexible is your device? Are you a person on the move and need your device to move with you? The Mesa Fundi goes wherever you go. It allows you to take notes, sketch your great ideas, sign documents and get work done wherever you are. Attach Microsoft Office for the ultimate experience. Make the shift and upgrade to the Mesa Fundi with Windows 10 Professional. The Mesa Fundi, flexibility reimagined. Available online and in store at all leading retailers. Mesa recommends Windows 10 Professional. Visit mesa.co.za for more information.
When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fibre to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtie's Wi-Fi boosters, Vobi Voice app calling, Office 365, and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is Tech Central. I'm thrilled to welcome John von Techner back to the show. John is CEO of Vivaldi Technologies, the company behind the fast-growing Vivaldi web browser, and he's also a co-founder of Norway's Opera Software. John, it's good to see you again. South Africa is 4 weeks into a five-week national lockdown. What's the coronavirus lockdown situation in your part of the world?
Thank you, Duncan, and it's great to be with you again. You know what? I think it's hard across the world. I'm living in Massachusetts. Massachusetts is now, I guess, the third biggest state when it comes to coronavirus. The number of people infected, and I think maybe even deaths as well. So it's not a great situation. Clearly, it's a difficult situation for people across the world. It's very interesting to look at the different situations in different parts. I'm following quite closely, obviously, what's happening in Iceland and Norway, my homes, in also many ways. And I'm glad to see that they are making progress in both places. But it's very interesting because there's a huge difference in how people are dealing with things in different places. It's extremely interesting, and the approaches are so different, and the results are so different in some ways. So it's a very interesting situation. On the personal side, I mean, like everyone else, I'm staying home. Mm-hmm. Not meeting anyone, which is terrible. I like meeting people.
Yeah.
My kids are at home, which is nice, but they would like to be with their friends and be at college. And so it's a difficult situation for everyone. And my heart goes out to everyone that has to deal with this on a personal level. I've had friends become sick. There's a father of a friend who is dying, basically.
Oh no!
Because of coronavirus, it's a terrible situation, and I'm just hoping everyone gets through this in a good way.
Yeah, how's it affected Vivaldi? I know your development teams are pretty distributed as it is, so I guess you guys can just get on with work. People just in their homes, coding away.
Well, I mean, we probably migrated to the system fairly easily, but the reality is most of the teams actually do go to an office.
Okay.
So we have three offices. The biggest office is in Oslo, and everyone was going to work. Now they're at home. They're also, some of them are having small kids. It's not always the easiest situation to have your small kids at home while you're trying to do work. And it's a situation that obviously a lot of people have to deal with. Now the good part is with our kind of work, there's quite a lot of flexibility, and we try to tell people to try to make this as good a situation as possible. Enjoy the time with your kids. I mean, it's valuable. Obviously, try to get your work done as well. But I mean, it's a balance because you want people to be happy.
Yeah.
And we have the same in Iceland. We have a team there. They're also liking going to the office, and now they're all sitting at home. And also here where I'm sitting in Massachusetts, it's a small team here, a handful of people. But we're not going to the office, and it's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. Always just staying home.
Well, John, the reason I've got you on the show today is Vivaldi has just released a major upgrade to its desktop web browser for Windows, Mac, and Linux, as well as the Android version of the software, which has just come out of beta. So I'm very keen to chat to you about that. But before we get onto that, how has user adoption of Vivaldi been going since the last time we spoke? How many active users do you have now?
I mean, before this release, we're at about 1.5 million active users, so thereabouts, that's where we are. I mean, we're progressing nicely. It takes time to build a company like Vivaldi, just like it took a long time to build a company like Opera.
Yeah.
And clearly, our competitive environment is not the easiest to deal with. But our focus is just building great products, and we are making progress with that. We just launched. We had a fantastic response, a lot of really good articles, a lot of great feedback from users. So it's a good situation. And as thus, I mean, we're providing a piece of software that people really need, and then particularly in this time where people are sitting in front of the computer even more than normally.
Yeah.
Actually having a great browser matters a lot, and that's kind of where our focus is.
Yeah. No, Vivaldi is built on top of Chromium. And since the last time we spoke, John, Microsoft repurposed or rebuilt their web browser Edge on top of Chromium as well. Was that a bit of a vindication for you guys?
I don't see it as a vindication, because the reality is when I was at Opera, we built our own core, right?
Yes.
And to be frank, if I had been at Opera still, Opera would still have its own core. I think it was a big mistake to drop Presto. I think it's short-sighted and stupid, I would say, drop Presto. But in some ways, the fact that they did that opened up an opportunity for Vivaldi. I mean, building a browser core is not trivial, right?
Yes.
There's a reason why none of the cores now are built from scratch.
Yes.
None of the browsers have their own core browser. As you said, even Microsoft dropped their core. And obviously, Mozilla was kind of inherited from Netscape.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, Opera, we had our own core. It was a great core, fantastic piece of software, excellent engineering, but someone had the bright idea that you could save money by using Chromium. I think it was a massive mistake. I would have loved to go and build my own again. But I also know what it takes. And as a startup, we don't have the resources. And the fact that Microsoft, Apple, and Google all are based on someone else's core tells you that if they can't do it, it's not trivial for a small company to do it either.
Yeah. Now, John, I've been using Vivaldi as my daily driver for years now. I think pretty much since it was initially released. I'm trying to remember when that was. Was it about 3 years ago now?
Yeah, I mean, our first official release was in 2016.
16, okay. So I've been using it on desktop since then. I've been using it on Android for probably, whenever that came out, 9-10 months ago.
Mm.
And it's as I say, it's my daily driver, and I do love the browser. But who is the target audience for Vivaldi? Who is it? Power users? In terms of feedback you get, who's actually using it and downloading it?
I mean, everyone is welcome. I mean, our view is basically, we're not saying if you're not kind of a power user, you can't use us. That's not what it is about. But obviously, we're finding that people that spend more time on the internet, they find more use for us. I mean, the point is, we have a different design philosophy. Instead of just saying, okay, we kind of make a browser for slash the everyone. I mean, basically, that we're providing something that is a one size fits all. Our design philosophy is that we are all unique and different, and we have different requirements, and we try to adapt to those requirements. So it's a different design philosophy. Now, if you just want to go on the internet and you don't really care about anything else, and you're not using the internet for anything but just watching some videos and maybe reading some articles, maybe you don't need us as much as if you're on the internet all the time. You're actually maybe using it for work, maybe using it for school, maybe just, I mean, the kind of person that has a lot of tabs open. It's that kind of user. But anyone is welcome. And I mean, I set Vivaldi up for my like parents and friends that are less technical. And I just ask them, okay, what would be useful for you, and kind of adapt it to their needs. And that, so I think it can be used by anyone. It's useful for anyone. You have features that are useful for people. And I think for the kind of product that a browser is, the kind of product that you're spending so much time with, learning a few extra tricks that can save you time and just make it a more pleasant experience is something I think is worthwhile. So yeah. We are open to anyone, but clearly the people that spend the most time online and are not afraid of downloading software, they're the more likely to install Vivaldi.
Now, I know we touched on this in our last discussion, but perhaps I think it'd be useful to cover this ground again. How does a company like Vivaldi make money?
I mean, the way we make money, which is similar to the other companies as well in many ways, although they typically have their own other businesses. Search is a big part of our revenues, so the search affiliate the deals that we do. And some of the bookmarks we include, if you use them and you purchase through them, there's a slight slice to us. The amount of money we are talking about is not a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about maybe $1 per user per year on average. So it varies from a lot lower than that and sometimes comes a little bit higher. That's kind of the revenue model that we have. So we are based off people utilizing the product, utilizing those kind of, again, the included search engines that we have, using some of those bookmarks. That's how we make money. Mm-hmm.
Do you, I mean, you've obviously got passionate users who use Vivaldi. Is there an opportunity perhaps, have you explored it to possibly charge for Vivaldi, perhaps a small annual fee or an upfront fee for lifetime use?
I mean, we've discussed if we should offer people, because a lot of people have been asking, can we contribute? But we want Vivaldi to be free. I mean, that's a core thing for us. We want Vivaldi to be free. We don't want it to be a fee. If at any time we would have something, it would be optional. I mean, yeah. It would yeah. be something. If you want to contribute, you can do that. That has at some times been discussed, but really what we want to do is just provide it for free. We don't need that many users to kind of break even. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, I mean, again, that's our focus. We're not driven by money as a company. We've gone the route of building a company, taking it public, and sadly then later losing control over it. So, I mean, our focus is to build a company that is controlled and owned by the employees. That can make sure that we stay on the straight and narrow and just work with the community to build a great yeah. product.
So it's more about the love of the browser than making millions of dollars.
Yes, I mean, if you look at it, I always felt that at Opera we had this special relationship with our users. I loved that. The fact that we had this strong user base that would give us feedback, that would help us. And they helped us build the browser. And when Opera went in a different direction, and decided to build a totally different kind of product, those users were left behind. And my thinking is you need a browser like Vivaldi is today that is listening to users, isn't collecting information about what they're doing, but rather listening to what they have to say. Mm-hmm. It's a different approach because most software today is looking at your usage patterns and then deciding, okay, so and so many users are using this feature and so and so many are using this. And then you decide if you include it or remove it. Our thinking is more about the individual and thinking, okay, if people are asking for things, that's what we listen to. We give them what they want and we give them the flexibility to have a browser that is unique for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the new software that's come out this week. Let's start with the Android version, which has just come out of beta. What's changed since the final beta release, and why should consumers consider Android users consider using Vivaldi as their default browser on their phones? Given that Google Chrome seems to be pretty dominant on that platform.
Yeah, I mean there's a lot of changes. Now, what we heard when we sent out the beta is there was one request that was basically repeated by a lot of users, and that was the ad blocker. I mean, that was the one requested feature that was on again and again and again. And we had been working on a tracker blocker as well, because clearly tracking is a massive problem on the internet today. So we ended up including that. And that was basically on demand based on what the users were asking for. On desktop, we always felt, okay, we have the extensions. People can use the extensions instead for those that wanted this kind of functionality in ad blocking. On mobile, that was not so trivial to do. And we ended up deciding, okay, we'll build this in and people then decide how they want to use it. So that was the most requested feature. Now, what we also looked at is how can we just make the browser better and more unique? And clearly, one of the things that came through was the use of tabs. Right. Mm-hmm. So on the mobile, tabs are typically off. You don't have them. And I think what's happened there is that, yes, you have tabs, and most people don't realize they have a lot of open tabs because the tabs are not visible. You have this little icon with a number in it, and you have no idea. You have opened 100 tabs. You end up opening the same tab again and again and again.
Yeah.
Now, I think this was a design that was required at the time in many ways because you didn't have the space. Now you have more space. So we said, okay, let's put the tabs in there. You can turn them on or off, but we are actually keeping them on by default. Just like on the desktop side, we're starting where you left off instead of always starting with an empty window in the beginning. So our thinking is that more users will want to be using tabs. We've made a new design that is highly recognizable as Vivaldi, that it is something that is visually pleasing and allows you to work with tabs in a nice way. We also looked at, okay, typically what happens when you take the browser and you have it on the phone, it's optimized for portrait mode. Now, part of this is I'm actually using a phone that's landscape mode. I'm using a phone that's called the Planet Cosmo. And before that, Planet Gemini. It's a small British phone. It's an Indiegogo project. And I really like what these guys are doing. They're doing another project now, which is looking very interesting as well. A third generation of these phones. But part of the problem that you run into is the phone, because it has a keyboard, it's in landscape mode. And actually using it in portrait mode is not really that nice. So from that perspective, in my personal case, it's a question of, okay, landscape mode is the thing. I want landscape mode to work. So part of what we are doing then is what you typically run into is that there is a problem with sites kind of doing things so you don't have a lot of space. So you end up actually having a small piece of the page that you see. And everything else is static or whatever. So part of what we did is, okay, we have to put in as much place as possible. So what we did there, in the normal design, when we are doing the browser in portrait mode, you have a top toolbar and a bottom toolbar, the bottom toolbar being next and previous and access to functions like bookmarks and notes and also the tabs in the old design. And what we did, we moved that to the top because you have a much bigger width. So why not utilize the width so you have a slightly different design in the landscape and the portrait mode, optimizing. Again, we are always about optimizing to the user. In this case, that means optimizing for the device. As part of that also, we added the little option of being able to hide the status function. It's kind of like going full screen, just like you do with videos. We think it's, in particular, when you're in landscape mode, that is really useful. So when you're in the browser, we take up all the space, if you wish. Right? It's a setting. It's off by default. But it's details like this, which is about adapting the browser to your needs and to the device that you have. And again, we are sure that people will have different opinions on this. And clearly, we also are seeing there are people that want other things and are requesting that. We'll get back to that in future versions. The reality, because we ended up actually delaying the mobile release for months to kind of get in some extra functionality, and that allowed us to polish the browser even more and get in these unique functions with regards to the user interface. And again, I mean, a lot of people are using the browser on their phone as a primary browser. Yes. So a browser then that is if it's your primary browser, you'd clearly want it to be more powerful. Yes. That's kind of what we found in the Opera days, right? That you want a browser that is powerful and can adapt, that can do more. I mean, I remember when we started doing Opera and people were saying, hey, who wants to use the internet on a mobile anyway? Right.
it's Opera's biggest business now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a totally, the world has turned around in this way. But at that time, there was kind of this, okay, why would you want to go and see the internet? And I mean, we went as far as to say, hey, we have to use stats because we had Opera Mini, which was a client service solution. And by the way, we kept the data of users always safe and we're not using it to mine users, but we did use kind of statistics to tell what are people doing. And we use that to say, hey, no, actually, people want to use the internet. And yes, the kind of internet that you're normally using on your desktop. So I think from that perspective, this concept of having a browser that actually you can do more with than just kind of browse. Again, depending on your uses, depending on how you're using it, that's important. And now, again, we have the browser on mobile and we have it on PC and synchronize them. It's kind of part of providing the full use that you need as a user.
Has your thinking changed at all about potentially developing a version of Vivaldi for the iPhone and for the iPad?
I mean, we want to go there. So if you're thinking, I mean, previously we kind of were saying, okay, this is going to be hard. That's still the situation, right? Mm-hmm. The problem is we can't provide the same code. So, and I wish Apple was more flexible on this. They're requiring you to use WebKit. Now, the reality is there is a Chromium kind of WebKit based on the iPhone. So we'll use that to provide an iOS version eventually. The problem is because of we are a limited size company, and because the requirements for our software is not just to kind of get something out. We have to have functions like sync working with our sync servers and all those things. There's work to be done to get it to work on iOS. I don't want to promise any date. It will be ready sometimes. We want to do it because we want to support users wherever they are, but we are kind of, priority-wise, Android is 80% of the market, and it just happened to be easier for us to do because of the limitations that Apple place.
Well, what do you think of Apple's your inability, rather, of developers to change the default browser on the iPhone away from Safari? Is that a major challenge for anyone looking to develop a competing platform for a competing browser on that platform, rather?
Yeah, I think all these limitations, they shouldn't exist. And again, Apple should allow, there's not absolutely no reason why they shouldn't allow a competing browser. I think it's really unfortunate in a situation where we have a few monopolies in the world. And Apple, Google, Microsoft, they own the platforms that we compete on. Mm. And whenever they put restrictions in place, and again, Apple does that on iOS, they don't do it on the Mac. In the same way, Microsoft is doing this with Windows 10S, right? With also putting restrictions and hindering users from getting things done in the way that they want. Those things are really unfortunate, and they should not be allowed to do it. I just think it's anti-competitive. It's stupid. They should stop. They should allow users to have the choice. I mean, users are paying a lot of money for those devices. The least they should be able to do is to choose which software they want to run on it without any limitations.
Do you think it's something that the antitrust authority should be looking into?
Yes. I really think that, sadly, the big companies that we are competing with, whether it's Microsoft, Google, or Apple, they're all misusing their positions in the market. And I think with something as important as the internet and the web, You want to see competition. You want to see open competition. And clearly, to do that, when the companies are misusing their power, they need to be told not to. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, we've taken this fight before. We took a fight with Opera and Microsoft, with the EU, as an example. I think these companies, they are what they are. They continue to kind of misuse their powers. But at the same time, I think it makes them think twice. And I think maybe sometimes that's the most important thing, that they actually think twice, that they understand there are consequences, that they're not almighty. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about quickly about the new desktop version, version 3.0. That's also got the anti-tracker and ad blocker software built in. I believe the ad blocker is off by default. Just take us through some of the features in the new version.
Well, like you said, I mean, the tracker blocker and ad blocker, both of them are actually off by default. And the reason for that, because the tracker blocker ends up actually also stopping a lot of ads as a consequence. Mm-hmm. And we just want that to be the control of the user. The user makes the decision how they want to do this. If you had a tracker block with that block just tracking and didn't end up as a consequence removing ads, then it would be a different situation. But the reality is because it is removing ads, we felt that it needs to be in the control of the user. Those are really important features, as that's what users are asking for. Other things that we've been working on, we added a clock.
I saw that.
And some people find that funny, but the reality, you're spending a lot of time in the browser. So that's, and we are, as a company, we think out of the box and we are thinking, okay, what is useful for people and what they're asking for. And as an example, my son was saying, couldn't you have a clock in there that would tell me when there is dinner and maybe that I should only be using the browser for 30 minutes and then I need to do something else like homework? Wouldn't that be nice? Yes, it is. So is everyone going to be using it? No. But it is useful for some people, and that's the principle of our design. You can have this in there that reminds you need to now go ready, get ready for dinner. And now you've been sitting in front of your computer for half an hour, go for a walk. And again, a lot of people run the browser full screen. They hide the information at the bottom of the screen, so having the clock there is useful.
Yeah, so absolutely. I imagine that would appeal particularly to writers like myself, but also to developers who get very focused and can spend hours trying to solve a problem. And they forget they need to move around, and a reminder like that might be helpful, baked right there into your web browser.
Yeah, it's so easy to lose time. And this is in line with what we are trying to do, which is to provide people with the tools that they need. And this fits into that. Now, other improvements, by the way, that we've been doing, spatial navigation got some extra attention in this release. And spatial navigation is a unique feature for us. And it's part of adapting to the needs of the user. And normally when you go between links on a page, you do that sequentially, which makes it useless. Now, spatial navigation, you do it visually. You go left, right, up, down. You hold down the shift button and the arrow keys, mm-hmm. or you're using keyboard shortcuts, which is another option. I just think that this is, again, there can be a number of different reasons why you prefer to use the keyboard. It may even be that we have a handicap to make it more difficult to use, a disability, that you may make it more difficult for you to use a mouse. So our thinking is always we adapt to the needs of the individual. This is an example of that. I think it's a really useful function. And we've had it in Vivaldi for some time, but we ran into issues. Our original release was using JavaScript, and would kind of change the page a little bit to put the functionality in. And we found that broke one page. Sometimes it was YouTube. YouTube had experiments that would break our spatial navigation implementation. So because of that, we had to turn it off. We then had, Google had made a spatial navigation, implementation at some states, which is off. And we tried to use that one. It wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. So we ended up taking our original code, improving it, and writing it on the C++ side. And now it's working really, really nicely. It's very visible. I mean, it needs to be, if you're using this, it needs to be in your face. You need to see what is visual. So we change borders inside the page. It's a really, really useful function for those that prefer to use the keyboard for whatever reason.
I'm going to have to try it out. I haven't tried it. It's on by default in the new version, is it?
Yes.
I'm going to try this out, John, because I think I need to see this in person because I'm not 100% sure how this works, but it sounds fascinating.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the kind of details that we want to kind of focus on. I, again, people have different requirements, and we are doing our best to kind of focus on those requirements. And again, this is a special feature for users, and I think it is it's part of our thinking that we adapt to the needs of end users, and hopefully people like this.
Yeah. So what's in the roadmap? What's coming down the line?
Oh, there's a lot of work. I mean, the interesting thing, this year is feeling like it will be the year of the ketchup, kind of where everything happens. In the old days, you had the ketchup bottle, you would try to get something out of it, and suddenly the dish would be full with ketchup. And we've had some of these projects that we've been working on for a long time. I mean, obviously, we now had the release of 3.0 with major features and the mobile release, which has taken a really long time. Partly because we were trying out certain things that ended up not working out so well. We were trying to use the same code base on mobile and desktop, and we ran into some roadblocks, and we gave up on that approach to do it natively instead. We've been working on the mail client for a really, really, really long time.
I was going to ask about that.
And I mean, a lot of us have been using it for quite some time, but it's getting there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a beautiful mail client. There's always difficulties when you're doing things differently, and that's definitely been the case for us. But it's getting there. We have a mail client. We have a new calendar as well that's coming in. It's all about, and we're thinking out of the box. I think you'll see there's innovation there that you won't see anywhere else. And we look forward to, I don't want to say too much, but this is part of what we're doing. I mean, we are looking at building a tool which gives you the flexibility. And I think there's not a lot of choices on these things, right? You may say a lot of people just use webmail. That's fine if you want to use webmail, but a lot of people also have multiple accounts, and the ability to deal with this is crucial for a lot of us. And again, I mean, I wouldn't use anything else. I've been using this actually for quite some time, but there has been a fair amount of work on stability. There's been obviously functionality, probably some feature creep, all the things that go into building products. But I'm thinking we are not that far from showing the first releases of this. And then we have a lot of other things, but we don't want to talk about everything that we're doing. And in reality, we don't always know what we're going to build until tomorrow.
Fair enough. If someone wants to play around with the mail client, is it available on the website at the moment?
No, what we're working on now is to get out a technical preview. The only people that have access to it is internals and Sopranos. Mm-hmm. This is our volunteers.
Okay.
Some of the translators actually have had access to it as well. But there's not a lot of people because with mail in particular, we don't want it to mess up, right? So we're doing our very best to try to avoid putting out a mail client that ruins your mail. That kind of sucks if that's what
happens. Yeah, for sure.
So we're trying to work on that, but I mean, it's working really nicely, and I think it's a unique product. Mm.
So will this be a completely standalone product to the browser?
No, I mean, our thinking has been that we want this integrated.
Okay.
It is basically your browser is your internet in a way, and having, once you get used to having this kind of functionality built in, you just find it's very useful. And the reality is a mail client needs a browser.
Yeah.
I mean, a mail, you could theoretically have a different user interface, but to view mail, you have to have a browser, because if they're webmail, you actually need a browser underneath it. Yes, it can be a simplified browser, but the simplest way is to just use the browser engine that we have to view the emails, just like you would do with webmail, but with the benefit of accessing your information locally. Mm. It's a key part of this, that you're able to work offline, you're able to work with multiple accounts at the same time, and kind of, it just gives you a different approach to this. Than using the webmails, and depending on which webmail you're using, again, if you're using like Google and the like, there may be ads or tracking and the like that you might be able to avoid with a client solution.
Will you include support for Exchange in the mail client?
Exchange is not part of the initial approach. We'll have to see what we do in the future. But the focus is primarily now on things like IMAP and POP and SMTP and the basics of most mail services.
Yeah. There used to be a great free email app that I used for many years, and I haven't even looked at it for years. You may know better than I do about what's happened to it. But Mozilla developed something called Thunderbird. Is that still around?
Thunderbird is still around. And by the way, I mean, my issue with a lot of these solutions, you look at Thunderbird, I think usability-wise is not so great. I think it's problem with Thunderbird has been that it's a project that actually Mozilla wanted to get rid of for years.
Okay.
It has funding, and it has had funding. But I think when you have a product that maybe hasn't had a lot of resources, hasn't had the direction maybe in the same way that kind of we have a very clear vision of what we want to do, and we have a very active community telling us what they want. Again, we have, for those users that have access to it, is a different approach. Thunderbird is used by a lot of people, millions of people, and a lot of people swear by it. It's a good product for them. It's not a mail client I could use.
Right. Fair enough. John, before I let you go, I'd like to just spend a couple of minutes exploring with you the impact of tracker blocking and ad blocking software on publishers like TechCentral, for example. At one stage, we were running anti-ad blocker software, and I've seen that becoming more prevalent amongst publishers around the world. If you're running ad blocker software, a message will pop up, either a message saying disable your ad blocker to view this content, or asking you kindly to disable it to access the content. Now, obviously, blocking trackers and ads impacts the news business, and the news business is already in a lot of trouble, as we know. Was it a difficult decision to include anti-tracker and ad blocking software rather in the Vivaldi release? Did you have a conversation with your team about the potential ramifications of this for the publishing industry? And allied to that, what do you believe the solution is if more and more people are using ad blocking software? What's the future of journalism if publishers aren't able to monetize the content that they're producing?
And clearly, I mean, this has been, and this is one of the reasons, by the way, why we didn't do an ad blocker for such a long time. It's not because users weren't asking for it. We always want to listen to users, and this was a difficulty for us. How do we deal with this kind of problem? But I would actually like to take this further back, because I think really the real problem is not the blocking of tracking. The real problem is tracking. Mm-hmm. The change in the business models on the internet that happened with the introduction of tracking is a much bigger problem for publishers than the tracker blocker, which is a consequence of the same actions. I mean, the reality is before you had the tracking, you had a working, well-working advertisement model for content on the internet. I mean, most of the publishers were doing fine. Mm. They would sell ads on their location. And people would buy ads on those locations because they wanted to reach a certain audience, not kind of just random audience, but they wanted to reach, okay, you have a tax site, you would get tax ads on those sites because people wanted to pay to have on your quality site. When Google changed the model, Google and Facebook changed the model, and it became all about the individual, then the location stopped mattering. And suddenly you had a lot more locations, in some ways optimized for bad content, which would cost very little to produce because you're not really doing any original content. You're not kind of putting in the efforts of those that provide real content. So you could produce a lot cheaper, and then you would just utilize the distribution methods of Google and Apple, sorry, Google and Facebook and the like to get things your way. And because you would be getting paid significant dollars just because you're reaching a certain audience. So that's the difference in this. And I really think that's a problem. I think that's the core of the problem, which is why I think the core of the solution is actually to stop the tracking and building of profiles, which has so many other ramifications for our societies. And I mean, I've been talking about this for quite some time, that this should be regulated, that there should be a regulation on what kind of information that we can collect on individuals. And if you're taking that away and then you're saying, okay, I mean, you can still have access to data, and I mean, companies sometimes need access to data. I'm just saying you can't build profiles on your users and you can't sell it. Mm. If you take that away, I think then we could maybe hopefully return to an advertisement-based system, which is more based on location, which I think would benefit those that have quality content. Because now, when you're placing ads on people, and you have no idea. You may be placing your ads in the worst places that you would never like to sponsor as an advertiser, but you don't know, right?
Yeah. I think the other challenge, John, is that many publishers, particularly smaller publishers, are reliant on some of these big internet companies to help them provide their analytics data, for example. So many websites, if not most websites, plug into Google Analytics, which I imagine is something that gets blocked by most tracker blockers. There are legitimate audience management companies. We use a company, for example, called Narrative to collect our audience statistics, but that company's trackers get blocked by software side. I don't know if Vivaldi blocks it specifically. I haven't looked, but plugins like Ghostery and others tend to block all of those sort of trackers, which publishers very much rely on to determine the size of their audience and use that to sell their content against advertising. So it's a really tricky situation. And I think
And I see this part, and I think part of the problem is where it goes wrong is the collection of information across sites.
Yes.
For me, there shouldn't be a problem with what you do locally. If you're analyzing the visitors to your site, that shouldn't be a problem, right? The problem is the collection of information across sites. It's the rampant tracking of people across the internet. And I think that any regulation needs to limit the sharing of data between those different sites. And again, you should be able to work with people to provide services and the like. But that doesn't mean that they should then own the data. The ownership of the data should be yours. And I think as a publisher, and I think you need regulations on this. And again, I don't think it's helpful necessarily that we have all these warnings about people kind of can we use cookies or what? I think there should be clear rules and regulations on what you can collect and what you can do with the data. And then there's acceptable use and unacceptable use. And I think what we're seeing now is kind of like what we saw in the early days of the internet. And there was a lot of pop-ups, and it was really frustrating for people. And then every browser had to come with a pop-up blocker, right?
Yes, yes.
And it's a similar situation now where the government has not stepped up. They've not dealt with the problem of big companies ignoring privacy and building these massive amounts of information on users. Again, if you were to stop the global tracking, I think most people want to support, if they're visiting a site, they want to support the site. The problem is, they're being followed everywhere, and so it's I think for a lot of people it's the tracking that's the biggest problem. So I really think the solution to this is regulation on this. Now there are other things that you can do, and I think, I mean, there are some interesting ideas, although I mean for me the real important thing is that you have free content. I think I'm concerned about quality content going behind paywalls, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a problem because you end up having a lot of the bad content free, which someone is paying for a reason. And then more and more quality content becomes behind paywalls. And that's one of the reasons that we didn't want to do an ad blocker and the like, because we were concerned about that. But it was happening independently of what we are doing because we are not really impacting the market as a small player. So in some ways we ended up not doing things for our users while kind of dealing with the bigger picture, we weren't helping. So I think there needs to be a solution on the tracking side. There needs to be regulation. But I also think what would be interesting is a standardized way to contribute to sites. Micropayment is not a new term. Obviously, there are some companies that are trying out different solutions. I'm a little bit concerned about, I mean, again, I'm not a fan of cryptocurrency myself. I don't like cryptocurrency. I don't think there's a need for it. And it's using up a lot of power, which is something we should be saving to save our planet. But I think in a way, a standardized way to be able to send micropayments to sites, I think would be a potential way of doing things. And I think standardized is the key, right? Mm. You have a way to do this, and there shouldn't be an overhead. Should be no overhead. There shouldn't be someone just because they're a man in the middle should be getting 30% or whatever. The money should be going 100% to the content owners. I think that's kind of, I would have loved to see the W3C work on a solution. I think in a way, the big companies like Google and Microsoft and Apple, they should be contributing to this. I really think that they should. So to provide a standardized solution that basically in your browser, you could kind of enter your credit card information, and then there's some formula how you then distribute that to kind of different sites. I think that would be a good thing. And I think we need to do something. Again, I believe in the regulation, but I think it's just very important to have solutions, because I think we all need the quality journalism that is on the... Sorry, let me just turn that off. Sorry about that.
No problem. Yeah, so John, I was just going to say that if Vivaldi was going to champion something like that at the various forums and get an industry lobby group together to champion micropayments to support journalism and support other online enterprises, I would certainly be cheering you on.
Thank you. And maybe that's what we should be. I mean, there are efforts. Again, we are seeing some smaller browsers like Mozilla is doing some things. I just think... The solution going with, I saw they were working about potentially working with a startup that would be taking 30% of payments. Again, I just think all the funds should be going directly, and I think it should be a standard. I just think the only way to do this right is that it's not a unique browser feature. It's something that every browser supports, and there's basically as a technical solution. I think that would be the best way.
Yeah. And I'm not usually a big fan of big government regulation, but you've convinced me. I think there is a need for it in this particular space, particularly to deal with this privacy issue.
Yeah, I think there is. And I think, just sometimes we need government to go in and do a job. There's a reason why government exists. And I think this is a case where we need government to step up.
John, let's leave it there. It's always fascinating talking to you. John von Techner is CEO of Vivaldi Technologies. Thanks so much for making the time.
Yes, thank you.